is in the Yoga program. The program is called The Wheel of Life, How Karma Works, and it is going to be presented by Geshe Michael Roach and Anna Christie McNally. We are very happy and honored to welcome them. And they came as students to the Advanced Bhagavad Gita course and also as teachers for this program on How Karma Works, which will be presented in the evening sessions in the next 9 days. So we're going now to introduce the presenters. Geshe Michael Roach is the founder and spiritual director of Diamond Mountain University. And as a student at Princeton University, he concentrated his studies in religion and ancient Sanskrit and Russian language. He met his teacher, Ken Rinpoche Geshe Lobsang Tarchin, in 1972 and studied very closely with him. He was ordained as a Buddhist monk in 1983 and is entirely fluent in the spoken and written Tibetan language and Sanskrit. After approximately 20 years of daily intensive study with Ken Rinpoche in New Jersey and at Sarah May Monastery in southern India, Geshe Michael received the Geshe degree in 1995 and was the first Westerner in the 600-year history of Sarah May Monastery to receive the title of Geshe, which is akin to a doctorate of divinity. He has also studied extensively at Sarah May with Geshe Thubten Rinchen, one of the great living scripture teachers. He has translated over thousands of pages of Buddhist scripture, being fluent in both Tibetan and Sanskrit, and is the founder of many organizations based on ancient Buddhist principles, including Diamond Mountain, Star in East, and his latest child, Diamond Cutter Institute, aimed at revolutionizing our most influential sector, the world of business. He's the author of the best-selling Diamond Cutter and 30 other books and translations. Lama Christie McNally has studied under eminent Tibetan lamas in India and Nepal and is a translator of Tibetan and Sanskrit. She is a co-author of the Tibetan Book of Yoga, the Essential Yoga Sutra, How Yoga Works, and King of the Dharma. A member of the first Diamond Mountain three-year retreat, Lama Christie McNally has spent over a decade studying and teaching meditation, Buddhist philosophy, and yoga. Along with Geshe Michael, Lama Christie McNally has taught in over a dozen nations to hundreds of thousands of people. He has recently published 2 books, The Tibetan Book of Meditation and 2 as 1, A Journey to Yoga. After this program in the Shivananda Ashram, she will be doing a speaking tour of Asia, Hong Kong, Beijing, Shanghai, Taipei, Hanoi, and Ho Chi Minh. Let us welcome Geshe Michael Roach and Lama Christie.
First, I'd like to thank Swamiji and all the staff at the ashram. They always pamper us. We don't get treated this good anywhere. And it's sort of bad because then when we leave, we feel everywhere else feels not so great. Anyway, it's an honor to be here and it's an honor to study the Gita under Swamiji. We, Margaret and I, waited for many years. We lived in Varanasi for a little bit, and we tried to learn Gita from some of the great scholars there. And there's a wise man in Tibet called Sakyapandita. He lived 800 years ago. And he said, villages never appreciate their own wise men. And I don't know if you really appreciate Swamiji enough here. You can't get that kind of explanation. I don't think anywhere in the world, even in Varanasi or, you know, someplace like that, you can't get such a beautiful explanation, you know, in your own language with so much wisdom and good will and good humor. You won't find that anywhere. So, you know, we were brought up to be careful about who we exposed our mind to. You know, our lamas were very strict about, my lama only invited His Holiness the Dalai Lama and his senior teacher to give teachings to us. He wouldn't invite anybody else. And he was very strict about who we should open our, especially our spiritual minds to. And so Lama Christy and I waited a long time to hear the Gita. And then we felt really, really happy that Swamiji has agreed to teach and taught us so far. And just looking over the notes, I mean, when you get home, it will take you a year to digest the notes because he goes like, you know, amazing depth and amazing, really beautiful. It's a lot. I haven't seen anyone outside of my monastery who could teach like that. So you're very lucky and you should know it. And you should take care to learn it well and pass it on to other people, I think. So tonight we're going to study a subject, let's say, called the Wheel of Life. And you each have a picture, I hope. If you didn't get one, I think about 20 people didn't get one. They're being printed tonight in Nassau, and we'll have more tomorrow when you come. So tomorrow, if you didn't get one, you can come up, let's say over in this corner somewhere, as you come into the temple, and you can get a copy. All right. This is a very famous painting in the Buddhist tradition called Sikkhe Korlo or Pala Chakra, and it means the wheel of existence or the wheel of life. And in the monastery, I studied it twice. I studied it four times, actually. One, those of you who know Abhidharma, it's a central teaching in the Abhidharma literature, which is the old Buddhist literature from about, you can say 500 BC. The student of the Buddha started that system. Then we studied again in when we get to Vinaya. Vinaya is a broad subject that we spend about 4 years on, which is the rules for monks and nuns. Discipline, you can call it discipline. And it's taught in the Vinaya, this wheel. And then it's taught again in a higher teaching called Majjhimika, which is middle way, studied emptiness. And we spent 12 years on that in the monastery. And there's a very famous line in a book called The Ornament of Realizations, Abhisammaya Alankara, which is written by the future Buddha, the next Buddha, Maitreya. And it says, Tenching Jaungjung Luktung Dang Lumitumba Tokache. Just two lines in a famous book by Maitreya that we are required to memorize in the monastery. It's about 75 pages. And those two lines form the basis for a teaching on the Wheel of Life, which was designed by the Buddha himself. So the painting you see here was designed by Lord Buddha himself. And Lama Christy is going to tell you something about the story. So this painting is 2,500 years old. And it contains secret information, all right? It contains a very deep teaching. And when Swamiji today was talking about the vision, Arjuna's vision in the 11th chapter, now you know, verse 3, and so on, the vision about of Lord Krishna swallowing the, not just one universe, Swamiji said, but many universes, and how terrifying it would be to see a being swallowing not just Paradise Island, but a few universes, you know? How terrifying it would be to see that. And how Swamiji also said a beautiful thing about how Krishna, that's Lord Krishna's nature, and that it wasn't that Arjuna saw something new, he just wasn't able to see it before. It was always there in Lord Arjuna, and Arjuna couldn't see it before. And then Lord Krishna gave him special sight, which we also call the eyes of God, I guess Devaksha or something like that. And then he was able to see Lord Krishna as someone who could swallow the universe. So when I heard that, I was thinking about this painting, okay? And so I'd like you to look at the painting. And the basic structure of the painting is that there's a terrible monster holding the wheel in his hands and legs, okay? And you can see his fangs are over the edge of the wheel. So he's devouring the wheel. It reminded me of what Swamiji said today. Because the main image of the wheel of life is that this monster has all of creation in its mouth, okay? In the inside of the wheel, you will find Vishvam. You will find all the various, multifarious expressions of existence. All existence, all living beings are caught in the mouth of this monster. Okay? And I remember, my Lama taught this to us for a year. He taught this painting to us, he made us memorize all the parts of it, and he was very, I remember the night he talked about the monster, and he said, look, the monster is death. Okay? The monster is your death. Okay? Then he got very, I'd say indignant. He said, all these Western people, they see this painting and they think that Tibetans are like superstitious, and Tibetan people are kind of primitive, and they don't know about airplanes and you know, nuclear weapons and other such wonders of the modern world, and you know, they think we're naive, and they think that we think death is some kind of monster with big fangs and skulls on the top of his head. And he said, we're not that naive, you know. He said about death. He said this monster. We don't believe there's some guy who sneaks into people's houses at night and kills them, you know. He says, this monster who holds the world in his hands, he's inside of you, and he's inside of each person, you know. And he's born with you. When you are born, then this monster is born inside of you. And he said, he's born like in your abdomen. And then he claws slowly towards your heart. You know, he's digging and chewing slowly towards your heart. Every morning when you get up, he wakes up too. And he starts chewing and digging more and more. And slowly he's digging, reaching towards your heart, you know. And then one day for everyone, he reaches the heart and he kills you. You know, this is your death. You are born with your death inside of you, you know. And from the first day of your life, he begins clawing away towards your heart. And then one day he reaches your heart and he kills you. You know? So he said, don't think we think it's some, you know, monster with three eyes who sneaks into your room. He said, you are born. Each person is born with this monster inside of him. And then he gave a very, very beautiful teaching on the wheel. It took over a year. And it's very, very beautiful. And something happened in the class, you know. We all thought he was going to explain some painting, you know. And we had read the fourth source of this is Avadana. It's an old birth story. And, you know, it comes in that we thought he was going to teach us some historical record about a painting, you know. And then slowly, over the course of the year, we began to see something else in the painting. And then when Swamiji talked about Arjuna getting his new eyes, right, and seeing something that was always there, I think what happened for us in that year that he taught it, I guess it was around 1985 or something, and we slowly got new eyes, and we began to see this little painting in a much different way. We began to see something about our own death. When I touch this painting, or I look at this painting, I feel my own death, and I see my own death. You see, so it's a very powerful. If you learn it properly, your eyes change, and you get a different view of this book. It seems like a little, you know, not so well done painting. And if you can read Tibetan, the bottom is all corrupt. I mean, we worked with the painter for a long time. He still didn't get it right, you know. But if you are fortunate, you know, if you get a good teaching on this painting, then your eyes change, like Arjuna's eyes change, and you see your own death in the painting. The monster becomes your own death. And if you study it well, and as Guruji said, I think it was Adi Shankara's two requirements for proper study of the text, or no, Swami Shivananda's. The main thing being, if you have reverence for the teacher, but most importantly, if you have faith in your teacher, your guru, right? If you approach this painting with a love and devotion for your guru, whoever your guru is, doesn't matter. But if during this brief few nights you approach this painting with reverence for it, but I think more importantly, if you approach it with a deep love for your teacher, and if you have teachers on your mind, whoever your teacher has been in your life, right? Then you will see something different here. You know, other people won't. You can take the painting home and show it to your family, and they'll say, "Oh, that's nice," you know. But for you, I think if you keep your teacher, your heart teacher, in mind while we're talking, and this would become an instruction on overcoming death itself in this life. Okay. Jiva Mukti, right? Not becoming free in this life and not going through the process of death itself. So this, the purpose of this painting, for those we call, we also call Bhagavan, means also someone who has Bhaga, can mean someone who has enough goodness inside them. A disciple can be Bhagavan, meaning they have enough good karma to suddenly see in a painting a way out of death itself, a way to overcome death itself. We say, and the Hindu tradition says, there are worlds of enlightened beings, right? Brahmande vicharantante in the Hatha Yoga Vidipika. You know, the yogis like Goraksha who already got enlightened, they are still walking the planet. And they're helping people. We believe there are worlds where people study, they have teachings like this. They have teachings about, like in this painting. And then in those worlds, they have overcome death. There's no more death in those worlds, no more pain at all. We believe there are worlds where people no longer die. There's no word for death in those worlds. They don't have a word for death. We believe that this particular world is not evolved yet. That the fact that we still have war and poverty and hunger and death itself, the fact that death still happens to people is local to this world. And there are many other worlds where they have a whole world, and everyone in the world has already evolved. And they don't have any of the suffering that we have. We are, as a planet, a little bit behind. And there are worlds which are much further ahead, and they don't have any of the pain and the suffering that we have. Okay? So this painting, which was designed by Lord Buddha. I hope that 9 nights from now, you know, it will look to you like you will look at it and see a way. You will at least understand roughly a way to prevent your own death and to stop death on this in this world, to help other people stop death in this world. It's the purpose of this painting. We're not giving, as Swamiji said, it's not a philosophical discussion, you know? It's a teaching that we hope, and it was intended to give you a very genuine and practical advice to stop this monster of death for yourself and for those you love. Okay, we believe that. We believe that if your eyes are opened, then later, when you look at this painting at home, you will see a path to stop pain in this world. And inside this painting, you will understand a path to stop pain in this world. Okay, and that's why we're doing it. Okay, that's our hope. That's the hope that we have. So for the first time, Yoshi Mago has extra time. Let's just let it be historical again.
It really is the first time. Yeah. First time I've ever seen. How the Wheel of Life first came to be, that's my job, is to tell you that story. So we have to go back all the way to around 500 BC. It's not as old as the Mahabharata, but it's pretty old. And that was when Lord Buddha was walking this earth, that he was alive. And there were a lot of different ancient kingdoms in India at that time, with lots of different kings as their rulers. But in those days, they were spiritual people. They were very highly evolved spiritual beings. I kind of like to think of it like a bunch of Dalai Lamas ruling the world. You know, if all of our political leaders were also our spiritual leaders as well, that's what the kingdoms were like in ancient India. So the people who we're talking about here, I'm going to talk about two kings, but they're also, I mean, the reason they were kings in those days is because they had a very powerfully good karma in every respect. And so they were actually very highly evolved beings, and that's the reasons why they were rulers of the people. And it's not the case in these days, you know, it's not the same. But so there were two kings. One is named King Udayana, and one is named King Bimbisara. And they lived during the time of Lord Buddha. And they started to develop this relationship with each other where they would send each other gifts. First, they started to send each other really nice verses of poetry or really nice books. And one person would send it with an emissary on a horse to the other person, and the other person would open it up and be very profoundly affected by this spiritual teaching, and then they would call their ministers together and say, okay, I have to give a gift to the king now, and what should I pass on? And then they would give an equally but slightly better inspiring gift to the other person. So it's kind of like there was this feeling amongst them that you would get this gift and all of a sudden you would be sort of obligated to give a slightly better gift in return. It's like the Japanese custom of yuri, where you don't really want someone to give you something because that means you have to give them something even better. So they don't want gifts. They refuse to accept gifts when you go to Japan. It's like putting them on the spot. So anyway, there was started to get this custom where first they sent each other poems, then they sent each other big manuscripts, then they started to send actual priceless, like precious gifts, then the gifts started to get kind of out of hand. They got more and more priceless. And then King... I'm trying to figure out who's in King Udayana sends King Bimbisara this this really amazing, priceless gift. It's a coat of arms that has all these precious sapphires and rubies and diamonds inside of it, and it's something that no weapon could ever harm you if you were wearing it. You know, arrows couldn't get through it, nothing. And aside from that, if you ever ate poison accidentally, because people always wanted to poison kings, even in those days, it would suck the poison right out of your system and you wouldn't be harmed by the poison. And then aside from that, it was actually quite comfortable to wear. So there were all these like really great benefits to this coat of arms. And it was made of some substance. He couldn't really figure out what it was made of. And he put it on and he was like, this is terrible, you know. And his ministers are like, why? This is going to save your life. If you wear it, you're practically indestructible. Nobody can kill you. And he's like, yes, but it's priceless. How am I going to give a gift back to King Udayana? I'm totally at a loss. And so he goes to his ministers and he asks them to price this precious gift that the king had passed on to him. And they said, I'm sorry to tell you, but if you took all the gold in your entire kingdom and piled it up as big as a mountain, it wouldn't be enough as this gift that you were just given. And he was distraught, because he felt deeply this feeling of giri, like he had to repay King Udayana with something of equal or slightly higher value. And he couldn't think of one thing that could be more precious than this coat of arms. So he snuck out in the dead of night, disguised as a commoner, and he went to this wise sage's house. And he went and asked the sage, what do you think is going to be more precious than this coat of arms? And the sage is like, I don't know. Why don't you ask Lord Buddha? And he said, Lord Buddha is in your kingdom now. And he knows everything. So go ask him. So the next day, that's what King Bimbisara did. He went with all of his retinue, as a king this time, to Lord Buddha, and he says, Lord Buddha, I have a question to ask you. I got this gift from King Udayana, and I need to give a gift back, and I need to know what's going to be more precious than this coat of arms. What can I give him that's more precious? And Lord Buddha looks at him and he says, a picture of me. So he was truthful. So King Bimbisara is like, great, that's a great idea. And he got all of the master painters of his kingdom to go paint Lord Buddha. But he sent the painters, and of course he went back to his kingdom because kings are very busy and he can't stand there all day waiting for the painters. And he hadn't heard from them in 1 week, in 2 weeks, in 3 weeks. Finally he sends a messenger. What's going on? Where is my painting? The messenger says, you better come see for yourself. So the king goes out. He looks at the painters. Every single one of them is like this, staring at Lord Buddha because they can't stop looking at his great beauty enough to paint him. So they hadn't even done the first brushstroke yet. They were all just standing around, just staring at Lord Buddha with the paintbrush in their hands. And King Bimbisara is like, this is never going to work. Lord Buddha, we have to do something. So Lord Buddha says, okay, I have an idea. I will hide behind a screen, and then you put a light behind me, and then they can paint the silhouette. Piece of parchment, and they can paint my silhouette. And then that's what they did. They ended up painting the outline of Lord Buddha, and then they said, oh, you can fill it in later. So they painted the outline and they filled it in later. So then Lord Buddha comes out behind the curtain and he says, I have a little bit more to add to your painting. And he extends the painting. I mean, right now, Lord Buddha, if you take a look at your little, he's a very, very tiny figure on the top right-hand corner of your painting. So Lord Buddha says, I have a small thing to add, and then he adds this huge wheel of life below it, and gives them all the details about exactly how we continue to cycle in this terrible cycle of pain, and because of that, exactly how we can get out of it. And there's even these very holy instructions on the bottom that start out Sampardha Shing Jumuaja, which means take this up and give this up. And that's something that we're going to be doing at the very last day of the course of the Wheel of Life. It's always nice to plant the seed on the first day for what you're going to do on the last day, so then everybody in the room gets to feels like they have to come along all 9 days. It's a Tibetan tradition. So King Bimbisara is very, very happy with the painting as it turns out. It's a very huge painting because, as you remember, this was a life-size picture of Lord Buddha because they just did his silhouette. So the Wheel of Life was incredibly huge. They rolled it up in this huge parchment. They put all sorts of silk around it. They put it in a box. They put it in another box. And then they had Bimbisara's army carry it to King Udayana's kingdom just to show him the value of it, that this was the most priceless thing he had and that he would put his whole army into protecting it. So King Udayana looks out his window and the army of King Bimbisara is coming at him. He's not quite sure what to do because he said, I just sent that guy a really nice gift. Why is he coming at me with his army? But the ministers are like, probably it's not what it looks like. So King Udayana went out of his kingdom gates to go meet the army instead of letting them into the kingdom. And so he was surrounded by all sorts of commoners. Like all the merchants and everything were all in the streets. And King Udayana had the people who were giving them the gift open the box right there and then in the street and show him the painting. And as soon as they started to unroll the painting, every single person around him hit the floor and bowed their head down to the ground and said, Om Namo Buddhaya. I bow down to Lord Buddha. And King Udayana, he's never heard of Lord Buddha before. And he's like, what is this Buddha? What are you talking about? But his eyes start to fill with tears and he starts to cry just on hearing the name and seeing the image of Lord Buddha in the painting. And he takes it back to his kingdom and he puts it up in his bedroom. And instead of going to sleep that night, he looks at it all night. And he looks at the Wheel of Life. And for some, like, this beautiful transmission happens between Lord Buddha and King Udayana, where he actually gets the teaching of Lord Buddha coming through the painting at him as he looks through each and every picture. And at dawn that day, he goes into a deep state of meditation. And he sees emptiness directly. He reaches ultimate reality. And that's the goal of this painting, you know, is to get out of the cycle of suffering and reach that state of ultimate reality. And there are many ways that this teaching can be passed on, like it was passed on to King Udayana in a painting. But as we see from the story, it's always through the blessing of the Guru. In that case, it was Lord Buddha, who hadn't even met King Udayana yet, but knew who he was targeting. Geshe Michael likes to say it's like a letter bomb. He sends it, and then boom, all of a sudden your heart chakra explodes and you're in a different realm entirely. So this is the goal of all of our study. It's the goal of, you can say, every single spiritual teaching there is out there on the face of this planet and other planets. You know, it's all targeted towards seeing this ultimate truth. And maybe we call it slightly different things, but once you enter into this realm of ultimate reality, you are free. You are free from the cycle. So everything we do here in the ashram, all the yoga that we do, all the meditation that we do, all the karma yoga that we do, all the bhakti yoga that we do, everything, it's all for this one single goal of getting out of the cycle of suffering and then becoming a different kind of being, a being that can actually help others to get out as well. So, this is a beautiful opportunity to try and experience the same thing that King Udayana experienced in this next, you know, 9 days of teaching the Wheel of Life. This is supposed to be really scary. I mean, I know maybe it doesn't look very scary to you. I mean, we have all these, like, horror movies and stuff that are probably scarier to look at first. But this is actually, it's supposed to be pretty terrifying. And when we start to get into the meaning of it, it actually does seem quite terrifying. Later, there's another story about this painting. Lord Buddha had two students, Moggallana and Shariputra, and they were his two best students. And they could visit other realms the way that we can visit other cities. Like, they could just travel, for instance, to the hell realms. And whenever there was somebody in their ashram who started to get a little bit too worldly, or they started to feel like they didn't want to have their robes anymore, and they were getting a little tired of the ashram life, then Lord Buddha would just say, Moggallana, Shariputra, would you take them to the hell realms today? You know? Would you just, like, take them for a visit to see the excruciating pain that's in one of the lower realms? And they would come back and they would be shaking and quivering and crying to Lord Buddha, what can I do to get out? And he's like, stay a monk, you know? Stay in the ashram. I think nowadays you could probably just, you know, like, go across the river here and you could see some other way of life, and then you'd be running back to the ashram. Okay, Swamiji, I changed my mind. I don't want to be out in the world anymore. It's terrible. You know, but Lord Buddha said, you know, I'm not going to be staying on this planet forever. So I need something to remind people now that, like, Moggallana and Shariputra won't be able to take every single person to the hell realms for the rest of time. We need a teaching about what is our actual existence, and so that we don't get caught up in some kind of distraction and waste our precious lifetime and then not be able to do anything about it. And then suddenly we're on our deathbed and we're like, I always meant to be a spiritual person. I just got distracted. I always meant to see ultimate reality. I just, you know, I didn't have the time. And we don't want to be that kind of person. And so there is a tradition. Lord Buddha made it a rule that on the door of every single temple that there ever was, this painting would have to be hung. And there would be a monk right next to it, like a temple keeper or something, that would be able to explain the painting to every single person who walked in the door. So actually, at some points, this is the very first teaching that a lot of people ever got, was the teaching on the Wheel of Life, because it's a very comprehensive account of exactly what the state we're in and exactly how to get out. Right. So...
So some kind of miracle happened today. We have two good friends, John Foley and Carol Rees, his partner. Can you raise your hand? So Carol was in India. They went on a trip to India. Carol went to a place called Hyderabad, I think, right? And she saw a painting of the Wheel of Life, a traditional painting of the Wheel of Life. So maybe Chandra, can you come? I need a big
strong mug.
Easel. Can you open that and call me that? So Carol came and sort of an old painting of the Wheel of Life. Carol and John, they came to me this afternoon and they said, "Oh, Geshe-la, we found this in Hyderabad and we wanted to offer it to you and Mama Christy." And then we thought it was really auspicious because still in Buddhism, every monastery, every ashram, every temple should have a Wheel of Life at the door, you know, near the door, somewhere near the door. This is still custom in our monasteries. And every monastery I've ever lived in, they had the painting of the Wheel of Life near the door. So by the end of the 9 days, you will know this Wheel of Life very well. You'll be able to explain it very well. So we talked it over with Carol and John, and Mama Christine and I would like to offer this version to the ashram. Yeah. So just a few other things. So I did get my time. When you came in, so we tricked you when you came in tonight. I hope you got our folder, okay? And that's for a couple of reasons. One, we believe this painting is sacred. And so be careful with it. You know, we're not allowed to treat it lightly. It's sort of like the instructions on how to cure AIDS or something. It's more important than the instructions on how to cure AIDS. If you could type in one piece of paper the formula for how to cure everyone with AIDS, we believe this is more important than that. So keep it nicely in the folder. We try to get one with a little envelope, you know, like a little, what do you call it?
Pocket.
Yeah, so please keep it in the pocket. And then you may notice that you got a pen. You may be wondering what it's for. It's not a pen. Our dream, Lama Christine, my dream is that you learn the wheel and you learn how to teach it. Okay? So I don't think it matters if you're Buddhist or Hindu. I don't think it matters. It's really an Indian wheel, okay? And we would, it's our tradition in our lineage that you should take notes so clearly and such good notes that if you were called upon 6 months from now to explain the wheel to someone, you could do it well. Okay, so we really, really encourage you to take notes. Starting tomorrow, you know, we're going to go through the recipe of how to cure AIDS. Seriously. A few people will get it. Okay. Bhaga, those who have bhaga bonds, they will get it. And then maybe it will save their life. Maybe they will move to a different world. You see? In this life. Jiva Mukti, right? So, if it's that important, you should take careful notes. You should be able to explain every detail of this painting to someone else. Because even maybe if you don't, even if you, if your eyes don't open during this week, perhaps the person you teach it to, something would happen to them. People see this painting, people learn this painting, and they have extraordinary experiences in their meditation or their sadhana like that. So, please, we beg you to make good notes so that you could pass it on to somebody else, the instructions, okay? And that's really important. If it were me, and if I were here for just a few days on vacation or something, I would cancel my return flight. And I would stay to the Gita, and I would stay to the rest of this. This is a, you could save a person's life, okay? It's possible from this painting to learn what you need to know not to die. It can be done. There are people who have done it. So, when you get a chance to hear the Gita, or when you get a chance to hear about this, then I think people in the ashram know that because they decided to stay here. But I think others of us, sometimes we think, I have to get back to New York, I only have so many days off of work, or my boss might get mad, or but there's a chance, if you study this well, that in your sadhana you could find a way to stop death itself. So I would say, think about trying to stay from the Gita and rest at the wheel. Let me see what else. We will cover karma. Okay. A big part of the wheel is how, I mean, this is the instructions on how karma works and how to get out of karma. So we will cover that also. I have like 10 minutes. I don't know if I ruined my reputation or keep going. I think tonight that's enough. We promise to go over tomorrow. It's very difficult for us. Take it home, keep it near your pillow, really. And just think, you got some very precious thing, a gift that was given 2,500 years ago to someone still being given to people. And would bring you and the people you know great, great happiness. Intense happiness for the rest of your life. Okay?